I would encourage you all to take out your Bibles. The passage that we're going to be reading today has some meat in it, and it would be really good if we actually looked at it together. So follow along as we read, and then once we're done with the prayer and we get into the message, I'm going to need you to take out the Bible again and follow along with me again. And so turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 with me. First Corinthians chapter 10, we will start with verse 14 and go to the end of the chapter. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men, and judge you what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body. For we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold Israel after the flesh. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What say I then? That the idol is anything? Or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not unto God. And I would not that ye should have fellowship with devils. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of devils. Do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and ye be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. But if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice, unto idols, eat not, for his sake that showed it, and for conscience' sake. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Conscience, I say, not thine own, but of the other. For why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? For if I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that which I give thanks? Whether therefore you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give none offense neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. And we'll stop there for now. So I know that that everybody's had a nice lunch. I had a great one. And it's a great time in the afternoon to just settle in and kind of listen to a message. I don't want you to kind of listen to a message as I watch your heads droop and your eyes close this afternoon. That's not what we've gathered together for, and this message and this word that we're going to parse together is too meaty and too important for us to just kind of listen. So open your Bibles back up. If you've put them away, grab the Bibles, everybody, and let's turn it back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 together. I want to see Bibles in people's hands. And we're going to have to go through this verse by verse, because if you were actually paying attention while I was reading, you might have ended this passage with, what did Bob just read? There's a lot that's packed into this passage that the Apostle Paul is throwing out at us. And so we're gonna dive into it. But before we do, I want to ask you a question. For the young man and young woman that are here, who do you want to be? I'm assuming that everybody here wants to be a believer if they're not. I'm hopeful that you want to be believers if you're not. And so as you look at your life, who do you want to be? And for my brother and my sister, what is the vision of you 10 years from now in your mind? Who do you want to be? Because that's going to be really important as we get into this message, to keep that in the back of your mind and to keep asking yourself, who do I want to be? We'll get back to that at the end and maybe have some application that helps you understand why. So to give a little bit of context, the Apostle Paul is dealing with a very controversial topic. In this day and age for the church, extremely controversial. He's tackling it in 1 Corinthians 10. He tackled it in 1 Corinthians 8. He also mentions it and deals with it in Romans 14. All three of those passages deal with it in a substantive sort of way. And it's dealing with, what am I allowed to eat? And why am I allowed to eat certain things and not other things, right? And to us, that seems kind of silly that that's controversial. But as we get into this passage, you'll see why it's controversial. Why? What are we allowed to eat? But he starts we're diving kind of like into the middle of a thought, because it would have been way too much to try to tackle the whole thought just in one afternoon. But I want to just kind of set the stage before we dive into the, starting with verse 14, 15, is at the end of chapter 9, we have some really famous, really the commonly known passages that the Apostle Paul speaks to. If you think about it, he says, for though I be, this is verse 19, remember this, for though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself a servant of all that I might gain the more. Unto the Jews I became a Jew, under those that are under the law as under the law, to them that are without. Like, this is that passage where he's talking about, I became all things to all men that I might by all ways gain some, right? That's that whole idea that I'm doing whatever I can to gain people. And then he finishes chapter 9 with the idea of the race, and that I'm running the race, and I have to squash my desires and my body and focus on the prize of the destination that I'm getting to. So that's chapter 9. The interlude between chapter 8 and chapter 10 is this idea of who Paul is and what his ministry is and what his focus is. And then he starts with chapter 10, and the first half of chapter 10 is, in my Bible, it's titled The Warning Against Forfeiting Liberty. But he looks at what the Jewish people were doing in the wilderness, and he says, this was a warning. There are certain things that we cannot do and we should not be doing, and don't let it ever be named among us, right? And because we don't want to end up like the Jewish people in the wilderness. And he lists a series of things. If you just kind of follow along because your Bibles are open, verse 6 says, now these things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted. Remember, he's referencing the Jews, and he's saying we can't do these things. So he's starting verse 10, chapter 10 with a list of don'ts. Don't do this. Verse 6, don't lust. Verse 7, neither be ye idolaters. Verse 8, neither let us commit fornication. Verse 9, neither let us tempt Christ. Verse 10, neither murmur ye as some of them also murmured. Verse 11, now these things are examples for us. So he is, in chapter 10, he's listing a bunch of things that if you look back at what the Jewish people were doing in the wilderness, that were no's. Don't do this, right? Don't do this. And so he clearly is identifying sin. So it doesn't seem to be all lining up, and they seem to be kind of like totally compartmentalized thoughts, but they will all line up. In chapter 9, at the end of chapter 9, he's talking about what his purpose is, what his drive is, who he is. And then at the end of chapter 9, he's also talking about that he has the eye on the prize, the end of his life, the goal of winning Christ, and he's running that race. Chapter 10, he kind of takes a tangent and he says, hey, there's these things we shouldn't be doing, okay? And now we get to chapter 14. And one really important verse that we all hopefully know, chapter 10, verse 13, there hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that you would be able to bear it. So we know that verse, right? We tell converts that verse. We talk to people when they're struggling that verse, and we remind ourselves that when we are in a hard time, that God gives us a way out. So that verse is the interlude. It's the moment between two thoughts that build on each other. The first thought is, don't do these things. And by the way, if you are tempted to do these things, God has given us a way out. He has given us a way out of these things. We don't have to do these things. Pardon me for a second. I forgot to put it on silent. My apologies. Put your phones on silent if you haven't. So then he transitions. And the transition then in verse 14 is, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. So he ties back to what was happening in verse 7. Neither be idolaters. Flee idolatry, okay? And then he like totally seems to change the topic. And look at verse 16 with me. Right, verse 15 says, think over what I'm about to tell you. Listen, judge ye what I'm about to say. Think over what I'm about to say. Verse 16. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we being many are one bread and one body. For we are all partakers of that one bread. Now, we reference this for communion sometimes when we're talking about communion. But what's the context? What's he really saying here? And what does it have to do with fleeing idolatry and everything that we've just read? Right? It seems at first glance that it's kind of out of context. For those of us that are believers, and for those of you that want to be and are looking to be believers, the act of communion, when we all gather to take a sip of wine that represents Jesus, does that tie us together? Right? It does. Because every one of us who's taken that sip, what's the reference point? It's Jesus. And so every one of us, as we pass the cup through the pews, and we take a sip of wine, of the same wine, we're referencing the same person. We're referencing Jesus. And when we break bread, and we take a piece of bread, what's the bread represent? Jesus, right? The broken body of Jesus. And so, what does that say about all of us? Right? What does that say about all of us when we together take bread? We are one. And one in what? Jesus. For we being many, there's a lot of us here. For we being many, we're one bread. We're part of Jesus. Right? Verse 17, for we being many are one bread and one body. We are all, this is obvious, but think about it for a second. Maybe sometimes we need to restate the obvious, that for the believer who's participating in communion and taking bread and taking wine, they are aligning themselves with Jesus. And we collectively are one in Jesus, because we're participating in communion. Good? He gives another example right after that. So the next part, behold Israel after the flesh. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? So if you go backwards and pretend you're Jewish for a second, and you were at the temple or at the tabernacle, and there's a sacrifice taking place, and you participate in the sacrifice, what's your identity? What are you identifying with? If you're participating in the sacrifice, aren't you identifying with what that sacrifice is about and who that sacrifice is for? Right? Fair? I'm starting to see some heads nod. The Jewish people identified with God and were called the children of God as they partook of the sacrifice at the altar. The church is the church. It's one as it takes part in communion together. So what happens if one of you happened to be living in the time of Corinth and you took communion one day, and on the next day, they happen to be giving out food as part of a sacrifice to the god Apollo down the street, and you went and participated in that sacrifice to a different god? What identity would you have? Day one, Sunday, I'm taking communion at church with the body. Day two, I'm hungry, maybe. I mean, there's a feast going on at the temple down the street to whatever god. And so I swing by and participate in that feast and the sacrifice, and I take some food. Is it controversial? What do you think? You don't need to answer. Obviously, it's rhetorical. But is it a good thing? Bad thing? Am I allowed to do it? Am I not allowed to do it? It's controversial. That's what was happening. Right? What I just described is exactly what the Apostle Paul is referencing. So he says now in verse 19, "What say I then? That the idol is anything?" So that statue that the sacrifice is taking place in front of, is that statue anything? No. It's a piece of stone. There is no god Apollo, even though they might worship. They're just worshiping stone, right? Or if it was Apollo. I don't know if it was Apollo. Forgive me, but you get it, right? Pick the god that they might have, the idol that they were worshiping. They're just worshiping. They're worshiping and sacrificing in front of a false god, an idol, something carved of wood or stone. And so, is that idol anything? He says in verse 19, "What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to the idol is anything?" Am I saying that that's really important? Is that idol anything? No, it's just an idol. Is that meat? Is it just meat? Isn't it just meat? Because that idol doesn't mean anything. So what's the problem with taking meat that's been sacrificed to idols? Specifically, at the beginning of this, it almost seems like they were just right in front of the idol taking meat. But I say, verse 20, "But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils." Right? These Gentiles are confused. Sure, that idol is just a piece of stone. But the people who are sacrificing, the people who are worshiping, they're worshiping devils, demons. Their minds have been twisted. Their understanding has been twisted. And so they're worshiping devils or demons and not to God. "And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils." And I don't want you to. My desire, my expectation is that you would not be at that altar in front of that false god participating in that sacrifice, maybe just because it's free food. So far, so good. That seems pretty straightforward. I think everybody here, by and large, would agree with that statement, right? Probably not a good idea to be doing that. He goes on and says, you cannot drink, and this is not, you start to see the reference back to those first verses that we read, right? So remember, the church is in communion, it's in one, and it represents its identity in Jesus Christ through communion, by taking wine, drinking from the cup, eating that bread. That's, we are identified with Jesus Christ until he comes back. The next chapter actually says that. You can see how all this stitches together. So he goes and he says, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You can't on Sunday take communion at the church and on Monday participate in a feast to some devil. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table. You can't take bread at the Lord's table and then do the same the next day at the table of devils. You can't do that. Why not? I mean, isn't it just stone? And isn't it just meat? And isn't it just wine? Hence, the controversy that they faced. So he goes on, and he actually shows us both sides of this, and then he gives us an answer. And so we have to go through this whole thing step by step to see both sides and to see the answer. Right? He says, do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? Like, what are you trying to do by doing this? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to make the Lord jealous? It's almost like tongue-in-cheek a little bit. Are you really trying to make, what, you're trying to make the Lord jealous by doing some of both? Do you think that you're stronger than the Lord? And then he says something that I have underlined in my Bible that I've really come back to over and over again in my life. And I would encourage you to do the same in your Bibles. Verse 23, right, with that as the buildup, he says, all things are lawful for me. In a sense, he's saying, technically, you can do this. Technically, you can do this and still be a believer, possibly. All things are lawful, but all things are not expedient. So technically, maybe it's okay. Maybe technically, through legalese, I can try to justify myself, but it is not a good idea. It doesn't benefit you. It doesn't build up anything. It's not good. All things are lawful, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful, but all things edify not. And this is one of the passages that we shared at the brothers' meeting yesterday about what does it mean to edify? And this idea of building up and strengthening. And he says, sure, I can argue that it's legal, but it's not beneficial. I can argue that it's legal, but it doesn't build up. It doesn't strengthen. And so what should I do instead? What should I do instead, he says. And he gets to the next verse. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. This doesn't mean, and this is a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but this doesn't mean that I should try to be as rich as you or that I should try to get your riches, right? I'm not seeking your wealth in the sense that I see that you have wealth and I want it. That's not what it means. But what it does mean is that I want you to be rich. I want you to be rich. Not in money. Not monetarily rich. But I want you to be rich in the Lord. And I want you to be rich in the Lord. And so we shouldn't take liberty, because we can. But we should actually focus on looking to the benefit of each other. I want to strengthen you. That's what it means when he says, I seek your wealth. I want to strengthen you. I want to build you up. I want to make you stronger in the Lord. I want you to be, this almost sounds like something out of some commercial, all that you can be in Jesus Christ. So he starts to break this down a little bit further even now. He's clarified that going to the sacrifice, going to that altar, taking food, participating in that feast should not be done. Should not be done. But he needs to provide some detail for the people. I mean, it's interesting that he doesn't classify this topic, isn't part of that first part of chapter 10. Right? So he lists in chapter 10 at the beginning a bunch of things that are no's. But this is a separate topic, and he's doing a much deeper dive. Because you see, food that's been offered to sacrifice, has been sacrificed to false gods and other things, seems like it's likely a lot cheaper. Once they've cut up the animal and done what they've done, all this meat that's left over looks like it's being sold for a lot less money. That's the sense. And so it's available. And so what happens if you're on a budget? What happens if you're not rich in money? A lot of the believers at that time would not have been rich. A lot of the believers at this time would have been struggling. What do you do? And so he builds on this the topic, and he says, whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat. And so let's just clarify what the shambles are. The shambles is the market. Call it the grocery store, but imagine the market, right? The marketplace. So whatever is sold in the market, eat. Asking no question for conscience sake. Really interesting statement. He's basically saying, if it's there and it's for sale and you don't know where it came from, buy it and eat it. And don't question where it came from. Because fundamentally, it is still just meat. And if you don't know where it came from, you're innocent. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Because the meat and everything that comes from the earth, it belongs to the Lord in the end, right? And so if it comes from the Lord and the Lord provided it and it's there and it's for sale and I don't know where it came from, buy it, eat it. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go. Verse 27. Whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question, for conscience' sake. So you're invited to a dinner. It almost seems like the feast is almost like invited to a big celebration. You're invited to celebration, and there's food that's set before you. Are you supposed to say, where did this meat come from? Is this kosher? No. Set before you, eat it. For your conscience' sake, it's okay. But if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice unto idols, eat not. Huh. Isn't that interesting? So, if you go to a feast and the host offers you food and you don't know where it's from, feel free to eat it. And don't feel guilty. Have a clean conscience. If you go to a feast and the host puts food before you and says, by the way, this came from the altar of Apollo or of Athena. Don't eat it. Why? Why? Why not? What's changed? Right? What has changed with that one sentence? This, by the way, this was offered to Athena. What's changed? Well, we have to reference back to what our purpose is. Remember I asked you that question, who do I want to be? What's my purpose? This starts to kind of unwind all the way to chapter 9, when the Apostle Paul says, I've become all things to all people, that I might save some. And so the Apostle Paul is starting to link and encourage the church to have the same purpose and to want to be the same people that he is. He also said, let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Like, I'm supposed to look out for your good. So if I'm looking out for everybody else's good, if that's the baseline, then why wouldn't I eat as soon as I know where the meat came from? And so let's find out. But if any man say unto you, verse 28, but if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice unto idols, eat not for his sake that showed it, and for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And I love this passage because at some level it seems contradictory. Okay, he just said, but it's not contradictory. It just seems, and that's why it's so, to me, it's fascinating. So he just said, just previously, that whatever is sold in the market, eat. And if somebody offers you something to eat at a feast and doesn't tell you where the meat came from, eat. Why? Because all of it belongs to God anyway. And it all came from God anyway. And then he proceeds to say, but if somebody offers you food at a feast and tells you it was offered to Athena, don't eat it. Because of that person? And because it all belongs to God. Anyway. And so, at first glance, it's like, well, how does it belong to God in both cases? But do you see that if I eat it, once I know where it's from, what am I telling the person who offered it to me? If I eat it when I know where it's from, what am I telling the person who gave it to me? What I'm saying when I eat it is, if we go back up to verse 20, but I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils. So what am I saying when I eat the meat that's been offered to idols, when I know it's been offered to idols? I'm saying it's okay to worship devils. And I'm no longer acknowledging that it comes from God. I'm divided. Once I know where it came from, I'm divided. And my testimony, my witness to that man who's offering it to me, who's obviously not a Christian, because he wouldn't be offering it to me if he was a Christian, right? So obviously that man who's offering it to me either understands where it came from, participated in that, and somehow has a connection to it. What's my testimony to him when I eat it? My testimony is that it's okay to worship devils. It's okay to worship demons. And what I'm doing is I'm actually not caring for his wealth. I'm not caring for his benefit. I'm not looking to make him stronger. I actually am just looking to enjoy some good food. So he's getting really detailed on this. And it's important for all of us to understand and to think about it as to how we apply things in life. And he says, for conscience sake, right, for his conscience, I don't want to mess with the person. If that person tells me, because he knows I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, And he says, hey, by the way, this was offered to Athena, right? And if I say, oh, yeah, that's all right, I'm just going to eat it anyway, right? I'm messing with his conscience, with his understanding of who God is and of who that idol is that maybe he's worshiping, right? I'm not helping him have clarity of mind. I'm not edifying him. I'm not building him up. I'm not strengthening him. Instead, I'm confusing him. And his conscience is being twisted. And you might be saying, Bob, this has nothing to do with us. We don't have idol worship and sacrifice meat sacrificed to idols today. I don't go to the market and I don't see things with labels that this was worship. This was due to the worship of Athena. But bear with me. I think there are some things that we can get out of this still. And so he goes on and he says, conscience, I say, not thine own, but for the other. Right? Conscience, I say, not thine own, but for the other. I care about that person. I care, and I want to help that person. Now, there's a dilemma with what I've just shared, and the Apostle Paul recognizes the dilemma. And so the dilemma with what I shared is, if I live life like what Paul just described, you control me, right? And you control me. Theoretically, the things that bother you, I can't do. The things that you don't like, I can't do, right? If I follow this, that's what that says. I have no control over my life. I'm, in fact, a slave to you and can't do anything. Unless you're okay with it. And you can't do anything unless I'm okay with it. So watch out. I'm going to be going to your houses afterwards, checking out everything you're doing, making sure what kind of books are on your stands. I'm kidding. But that's the dilemma. And so the Apostle Paul asks almost a rhetorical question here. He says, why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? Why is my liberty to be controlled by another man's conscience? For if I by grace, if I by thanksgiving, if I'm thankful, if I'm a partaker of something, why am I evil spoken of for that which I give thanks? So, brother and sister, the message and the thought that he has here, as far as I can understand it, is that you shouldn't be coming to me and say, Bob, I don't like what you're doing, stop it, for every little thing I do. Now, that doesn't include sin. This is about something that's very specific, right? If I'm sinning, please call me out. But you shouldn't be trying to control me. Instead, I should be focused on your benefit. See the difference? You shouldn't be judging me. I should be focused on benefiting you. And so instead of you watching every move I make, instead of me sneaking into your house to see what books you have, following you on every little social media thing and then calling you out, instead of me doing that, I should be looking for your benefit. And you should be looking for my benefit. And so your lives should be strengthening me, and my life should be strengthening you. Whether, therefore, you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, verse 31, so this one should be underlined too, do all to the glory of God. Give none offense. Listen to this one. This one should be underlined too. Give none offense. There should be no occasion to take offense. To who? Neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. He concludes, actually, to me, the conclusion is starts in the next verse. I mean, the next chapter is the conclusion. Verse 1 should be part of chapter 10 in some way, because verse 1 says, be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ. There's a song I want my life to tell for Jesus. Who do you want to be? When it's all said and done, when something's written in the newspaper or on a tombstone, or when people talk about you after your death, who do you want to be? What do you want to be remembered for? What's the epitaph going to be? I want my life to tell for Jesus. Everywhere I go, I want my life to tell for Jesus. That was the Apostle Paul. Right? That was the Apostle Paul. In chapter 9, I become all things to all people because I want to save somebody. I'll do whatever it takes, not sin, but I will go to the ends of the earth to try to save people. I'm going to fight my body. I'm going to fight my desires. The pleasure that I want, I'm going to squelch because I have my eyes on the prize of the high calling of Jesus Christ. Apostle Paul says, I want my life to tell for Jesus. And he says the same thing for us. He says the same thing to the Corinthian church. And he says the same thing to us today. Follow me as I follow Christ. Everything you do, do it for the glory of God. Don't argue if it's legal or what's wrong with it. That's the wrong focus. My focus needs to be on you and on your benefit. Your focus needs to be on me and all of us and everybody else's benefit. Not just in here, but out there too. That was the big punchline that he makes at that latter half of that chapter, right? The meat that he's talking about and the person that he's having this conversation with is likely not a believer. And he's saying, for his conscience' sake, be clear and be accurate and be consistent in your witness. And so that's my exhortation. We can fall into traps. The first part of this message, we can fall into traps of scrupulosity. It's a big word, but where people fall into the trap of trying to be perfect, and they're trying to psychoanalyze and hyperanalyze every little thing that they do. But that's not what we're called to. He says, if it's good, it's good. If your conscience is clean, let your conscience be clean, move on. But think about the other person instead. Right? Think about the other person instead. And there are times in life where we do things in ignorance. And we're okay if they're in ignorance. But when I know that this has been sacrificed to idols, if I know that this has Eastern mysticism involved with it, is it a good thing for me to be involved in things that involve Eastern mysticism? No. He says no. The word says no. Because my witness is compromised. You can identify certain things that on the surface look good. On the surface, there's an argument to be had for why they're okay. But if you run them past the test, the filter of, is this benefiting my brother and my sister? Is this benefiting the accuracy of my witness to the person that finds out that I'm a Christian? And if the answer is, I'm not sure anywhere, then for conscience' sake, don't do it. Let your life tell for Jesus.